Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Michael Steele podcast. Yes, I'm Michael Steele. And what a hell of a week to be a Republican. Okay, I'm still a Republican. I know you guys are giving me crap about that, but you know the method to my madness. All right. So just roll with me here. But I'm really happy that you are with me today. And I'm excited about the conversation because, you know, what I try to do is try to spotlight some really bright stars out there that are kind of making their way and doing their thing and cutting a different path, whether they're Democrats or Republicans. It doesn't matter to me as long as they want to be good public servants. So we kind of spotlight that. And we've got a brother I think you're all going to be impressed with. And some may say that this is going to be a tough task ahead of him. I don't know. I think when you hear him, you'll feel otherwise. He is Sergeant Marcus Flowers, who has spent most of his career defending our country. He first served as an active duty member of the United States Army, followed by more than 20 years as a contractor or official for the Department of Defense and State Department. He spent decades in combat zones around the world and has worked on four continents. And he's bringing that experience, his values, and his hope for the people of his community to a congressional race in Georgia. Yes, he is a Georgia Democrat running for Congress to replace Marjorie Taylor Greene. Oh, yeah, baby. Bring that one, right? He is challenging Ms. Greene in the 14th Congressional District. Sergeant Flowers, welcome to the podcast.
Michael, thanks for having me. How are you today?
I am great, brother. I am great. And there's a lot to get into, both on the national as well as what's going on in your race. But let's before we get into that, why don't you give folks a flavor of who you are and what's animating this desire to, and at this time, to put your name, your family, on the line to run for office?
Well, you know, I don't know how I follow up that intro that you just did, but, you know, let me try. You know, I'm just a small town boy from Troy, Alabama, birthplace of John Lewis. I was raised there up until 11 when I moved to a children's home in Talladega, Alabama, which butts right up against this district. My father lived here more than 40 years. So I've got a long history with this district. This is basically home for me. At 18, like you said, joined the Army. I was first in the reserves while I was going to school. Mm-hmm. Then I decided to go active duty about a year and a half after I, got out of high school and got stationed overseas at an intelligence listening post in Germany. So I got the full flavor of intelligence and electronics warfare.
And
I'm
just coming home to roost, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. We'll get into that in a minute. But I'm a logistics guy and compliance guy. That's my background. Trying to save taxpayer dollars. That's what I've always done. Left the Army, went right into defense contracting, ran the intelligence and electronics warfare regional support center in Europe from 2001 until 2003. I split my time between Germany and Kosovo there. But on September 11th, 2001, I was on a mission at Ramstein Air Base. And, watching us get our air assets off the ground.
Right.
You know, before I really knew what was going on, I had airmen coming out saying, "Hey, the World Trade Center has been attacked." And I was like, "What is going on?" Mm-hmm. So, you know, we went in and watched that footage, you know, that shook me just like it shook everybody. Subsequently, I spent the next decade in war zones, as you told everyone, in Iraq and Afghanistan. You know, I wore all kinds of hats, director of logistics, you know, mentor, subject matter expert, you know, helped train the Afghan National Police and Afghan National Army on compliance tasks, worked a little bit in foreign military sales, making sure our assets were being used the right way, overseeing a few of those projects. Came back to the States, as you said. Well, I actually worked on a governance project with USAID, and you mentioned that, working for State Department as well. You know, we're trying to teach local Afghans and Iraqis, you know, how to govern properly.
How to govern, right, some
of those, you know, some of those people were warlords, and, you know, that was, you know, talk about that a little bit, you know, trying to teach them, you know, hey, there's a way to do this the right way. You know, so I've got some feelings about us leaving Afghanistan. You know, I don't think the mission was quite complete there, but I'm hoping that, you know, the Afghan National Army and Afghan National Police can pick up and take over, you know, security of that nation. Like I said, came back here, worked for the Department of Defense up until very recently, on January 6th. Well, let me tell you what got me into, you know, politics. First of all, I was, May 25th, I watched George Floyd being murdered. And I'd always considered myself a nonpartisan, you know, coming from the background that I come from. I served multiple presidents or under multiple presidents. So I just never got involved in politics. You know, my job was to protect and defend the Constitution. And I always had a commander in chief at the top of the food chain. You know, we were going to follow orders, and no matter who it was. But May 25th, something started stirring in me after that day. You know, I'd never been on Twitter or anything before, but after that, I wanted to hear what people were saying. So I decided maybe I should start doing some activism or things like that. So I want to listen to what people were saying, you know, hear from the people. So I started talking with people around then. And, you know, something else happened shortly thereafter. John Lewis, one of my idols, a man that I've followed for years and years, he died. C.T. Vivian died. And at that time, I started thinking, well, who's gonna carry on that message? Not thinking I would be even considering trying to trying to carry on his message. I mean, a giant in my eyes, I could never fill his shoes. So spent the whole summer talking to people, listening to people. It's kind of my listening thing. And I tell people I'm not running or talking to people because I'm running. I'm running because I've been talking to people and listening to what people say, and on both sides, Republicans and Democrats. You know, I live in a heavily Republican area, so most of my friends are Republicans. But January 6th, you know, watching a Confederate battle flag paraded through the Capitol Rotunda, seeing police officers, you know, beaten with American flags, sprayed with pepper spray, watching people get killed. You know, granddaddy was a sheriff, and you know, that's where I get the whole hat thing. He used to wear the hats. That's where, if people ask that question, that's where that comes from. But, you know, on that day, something just, you know, I don't know, broke inside of me.
So that led you to look at our politics differently, look at governing differently when you saw members of Congress under attack. But then how did you respond when they went back in and continue try to take the vote away from the good people of Georgia and Arizona and Philadelphia and elsewhere?
I expected something completely different to happen when they came back in. I expected everybody to, you know, be furious. And some were on that day. And I was furious. I sat there and listened to a couple of people in disbelief, like, you know, you realize what just happened. Very next day, I was a government official at the time. Very next day, I called my supervisor and said, I'm resigning my position as a government official and I'm running for Congress. And you said, I support you 100% because I know you're not going to sleep unless you do something. He wasn't surprised in the least bit. And, you know, that's,
So how's that campaign coming together? How's that? So you're up against Marjorie Taylor Greene in the 14th congressional district. It is a deep red district. For folks who don't know or can't appreciate it, it contains the northwest portion of Georgia. It's the largest. Mm-hmm. Its largest city is Rome, Calhoun, and Dalton.
Dalton.
President Trump carried your district with 75% of the vote in the 2020 cycle. Mm-hmm. Governor Kemp of Georgia won the district, carrying it with 75% of the vote. The Cook Political Report partisan index, your district is the second most conservative district in the state behind the 9th district. Mm-hmm. You are an African-American Democratic candidate for Congress in that district. What's your secret sauce going to be?
You know, here's the thing that I tell people about me. I like to meet people where they are. And let me tell you something about the people of this district. They are kind, they're caring, they're generous people. You know, I tell people all the time that people here, they'll hold the door open for you, even if you're 20 or 30 feet away, even in a pandemic. Yeah. Mm-hmm. These are the people that wave at you when you're driving. You know, I've grown up around these people my entire life. Well, not entire life, because I left the country for about 20 years.
Right.
But
right.
I came back.
Right.
You came back home to them.
You came back home to them. Right. You didn't go to New York. You didn't go to, you know, Arizona or someplace. You came back home to Georgia.
Went out into the world.
I think there's a song about that, isn't it?
Red Dirt Road. I think that's the one. I went out into the world and came back in. This is home. This is where my family's from. I know the people here, and I know that they feel like they haven't been heard or seen. My secret is I'm going to get in Congress and I'm going to bring them closer to their government, make them feel closer to their government. I got to get out and talk with them. And I'm under no illusions that this is going to be hard. My life has been a series of uphill battles.
Right.
I know
right.
I can't take this hill alone. I'm going to need a lot of help, but I think we can do it.
How are the Democrats responding to? We'll get to your opponent in a moment. I have no regard for your opponent. So just so everybody who listens to this podcast knows where I am with her ilk. She should not be in Congress. She is an abomination to the political process. But I feel that a soapbox coming, so I'm going to get off of it for a second. How are Democrats looking at this race? Look, I know as a former county chairman, state chairman, national chairman, when the political guys come into you and they're giving your analysis, giving the chairman who's going to be making decisions about where to put resources, people, et cetera, for upcoming cycles, they look at information I just shared and they go, dude, this district is crazy. There's no way. What are Democrats saying to you? Are they excited and see the possibility that they've got a candidate in you who actually connects to this district at a granular level? Like you just said, you know these people. These are the folks that wave to you as they're driving by or open doors for you. So you know that kind of aspect of who these people are. And may have a way of cutting across the QAnon crazy that you know these people aren't buying. They're not. That's not who they are.
Exactly.
And so how is that going on the Democratic side before we get into the broader campaign for you? Look, and then I can appreciate where you are on this because. I grew up in Washington, D.C. I was outnumbered, 15, 20 to one. I live in Prince George's County, Maryland. You know, there are only like 50 some thousand Republicans out of 800,000 people who live here.
And look at everything you accomplished.
Right. So how does the party marinate over your campaign and what are they willing to commit? As you said, you cannot do this alone. This is not going to happen without a level of investment, not just dollars, but people. Mm-hmm. How do you feel about it? What do they feel about it? How's that looking?
Well, I'll sum it up in one word. Hopeful. I've talked to, I'm not going to give any names right now, mm-hmm. but I've talked to a lot of the Democrats here in Georgia. And I've spoken with all of the party chairs in the district. Look, what we're looking to do is make an investment in this district. That's what this campaign is trying to do here. I think that a significant investment in the district hasn't been made in quite a while or ever since this district has been, you know, a district. And so it's a young district, but we're going to make an investment in that district. We're going to turn out the vote here. Looking at everything going on with the voter suppression bills that are coming out here in Georgia, we're going to push back aggressively against that. And you touched on something earlier. My broader fight is with, and I hate using the word fight, but right. what I'm going to push back against
right.
is the misinformation and disinformation that's out there nowadays. You know, I've seen firsthand the effects of radicalization. I've been at Camp Buka, and you probably heard of Camp Buka because that's where Abu Baghdadi came from. That's how ISIS got started. I've seen our enemies up close and personal, and that radicalization in their eyes. And just because someone's of a different political party or have different views, they're not our enemies. And this is the thing that we got to get away from. You know, we need a strong two-party system, full stop. You got to listen to each other. We got to get back to a place of truth and honesty. And that's what I'm going to bring to the table here. And we're going to make an investment in this district. That's what I tell everyone that I talk to in the party. Look, we have to make an investment in this district, and we have to talk to people and reach out. We can't just say, oh, these guys are, you know, right. I'm not writing anyone off.
Right. Are Democrats and I would say independent voters, to the extent that you have and every community does have a group of independent voters out there, are they looking at the race seriously, or are they? I'm sure that there's still some concern. It would be, it's just typical. The numbers on paper tells you how difficult the haul is. But coming up in a very competitive environment where the House is on the line, I don't want to put you in a position right now to speak for the people of your district about the current incumbent who holds the seat. The fact that she's been kicked off of her committee, she's basically taking up space on the Hill. She has no job except she's not changing anything except running behind Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez screaming at her all day long. The image of the current member of the representing the 14th congressional district. But nonetheless, what are voters saying to you? What are Republican voters saying to you about the possibility? And, you know, look, I'm not looking for bullshit answers, I'm being very serious. I mean, because it's, you know, at the end of this, I'm gonna ask my folks to support you, but I want you to be honest about where you are. So they know, you know, what are Republicans saying about this race and the current incumbent? Do they see her as Yahoo, yeah, go girl, you got it? Or are they sitting there walking around? You talked about people waving as they walk down the street. They just walking like, okay, someone got the paper bag. We can. where is that? Where is that element of this race for you at this point?
Remember, I told you before, I'm not talking to people because I'm running. I'm running because I've been talking to people, and to a person, Republicans and Democrats, they're embarrassed by her.
Right.
And even more so now. They were embarrassed before she got elected. I mean, if you look back at the election.
Well, her election, that was just a hot mess. Right.
Yeah. I was trying to help the former guy. You know, he dropped out, and understandably so. I don't fault him for that. I mean, it was bad timing, but
right.
You know, it's just what it was. But everyone's embarrassed. You know, that's not what they want. I get what people wanted before. They wanted someone to go into Washington and shake things up. You know, but I tell people, you don't go to Washington and change it. It changes you. Marjorie Taylor Greene does not belong in governance, full stop. She's not there to help the people of our district.
Right.
She's not there to get the work done. She's there to promote herself. That's what the antics are all about. And I'm not about that. I'm not going to be that person who's, you know, doing interviews on OAN or Newsmax or Fox, Yeah, I'm going to put my head down and do the work just like I've done my entire career. You know, you'd never heard of Marcus Flowers before because I was that compliance guy behind the scene saving you taxpayer dollars. You'll never hear about guys like me. I'm that rank and file guy that's always done the work, and that's what I'll do in Congress. It's not what she's doing there. You know, and people are seeing that.
I like that idea. You know, I'm the everyday guy who's going to do the work. You know, you're the guy who's in the space when we need someone in the space to get things done. Marcus, we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, I want to get a little bit more into the kind of congressman you want to be. We're having a great conversation with Marcus Flowers, Democratic candidate for 14th Congressional District of Georgia. Such a pleasure to have him on. We're going to take a break. We'll be back with more after this.
I'm sports psychologist Dr. Andrew Jacobs. I created the Sportsmanship Foundation to promote and educate parents and athletes about the role of good sportsmanship in our development. Learn more at winnersunlimited.com. That's winnersunlimited.com.
All right, folks, we are, like I said, having a good conversation with Marcus Flowers, candidate for Congress, 14th Congressional District, looking to unseat Marjorie Taylor Greene of Georgia, or AOC's worst nightmare on any given day in the halls of Congress. So Marcus, the congressional piece, what kind of congressman do you want to be? And what are you going to be pressing first for the people of the 14th Congressional District when you get to Congress, whether you are in the majority or the minority? Because that's going to be a jump ball for next year. You could very well be coming in to a Congress with majority leader, God, I can hardly say it, Kevin McCarthy. Hopefully, Scalise will have something to say about that or some others. But if that's the case, regardless, how do you see your service as a congressman? What is it you're looking to accomplish?
Well, I'll start with your second question first. I'm going to work on the things that the people here in our district sorely need: jobs, small businesses, infrastructure, rural health care. One other thing that is really, really important to me: I'm a disabled veteran. Mm-hmm. Suffered a traumatic brain injury. So veterans' issues for me are of paramount importance. Georgia has a lot of veterans, has a lot of military bases. These are the things that I want to work on. COVID's starting to get under control. That was one of the things I talked about before, getting shots in the arms, breaking through some of the disinformation. As far as the type of congressman I would like to be, I want to be the same person I've always been. I've always been able to sit down and talk with people and negotiate. I say to people that, you know, I can work with anybody because I've worked with everybody, you know, from, you know, our allies in the UK, Germany, France, Italy, to our Afghan partners and Iraqi partners there. So, you know, I believe in sitting down and listening to people and compromise. That's the only way I see being able to move forward. You can't, you know, have a conversation with someone from across a stadium, you know, meet on the 50-yard line and start there.
So right.
That's the kind of congressman I'd like to be. You know, I look at people in Congress who I've idolized over the years. You know, you have people like Jim Clyburn, you know, and John McCain, who I met in Baghdad once and had a conversation with him. I thought he was a great man, you know, a Republican. Sat there and had a conversation with me, just a nobody walking down the halls of the embassy. So you admire stuff like that.
Right. So, well, that was McCain.
That's the kind of person.
That's who he was. Yeah. And he saw you in uniform. I'm sure he gravitated immediately. You know,
I wasn't in uniform. I was just in, you know.
Oh, you were just in street clothes. Sure. Even more so. Awesome.
Had a brief conversation with me. I thought he was a great man. But this is before he ran for president, but you know, those are the type of people that, you know, Ted Kennedy, they'd sit down and they talk with the other side. I think we need to get back to that. And no one's talking anymore. This bitter partisanship, you know, it's got to come to an end.
Do you hear that from people in your district? Are you hearing, as you said, you're running because you've listened to people, and what are they saying to you that they're looking for? We all know, yes, Trump won the district 75%. We got it. We know the drama around the last election that elected Taylor Greene. But I would think that in the main, those voters, as you've already touched on, healthcare, infrastructure, jobs, the economy, they do have ideas of what they want those things to be and what they want them to do for them. What are they saying to you about the issue? If you had to say for this district, what's the number one pressing issue that they want done that Marjorie Taylor Greene is not addressing or has not addressed? What would that be?
She hasn't really addressed anything.
Yeah,
people don't want
right,
their
right. So pretty much everything.
They want the work to get done. They don't want to be taxed any harder in the middle class, and I get that. You know, I don't want to tax the middle class any harder because I'm a part of the middle class.
Right.
You know, but they want work to get done. They want government to function. They want an effective and efficient government. You know. Now, no one person's going to be able to solve our problems. And they thought that was going to happen the last time. I understand that. Mm-hmm. But an effective and efficient government can solve a lot of problems. An effective and efficient government should be able to tackle a lot of problems. And right now, it's not effective or efficient because we're not talking to each other. You know, the bitter partisanship, once again, it has to end. We got to learn to get back to a place of compromise. That's what's missing.
How's that changed the nature of running for office for you? Or for anybody? I mean, how you're in an environment where one party is spewing a lie that the election was stolen and the guy that lost actually won. You've got a member who's sitting in the seat that you're going after, who's running around the country spewing that lie and spreading other lies, conspiracies,
disinformation.
How does that change the way you operate? How do you cut through that? How do you cut through the big lie when you run up against someone in your district who says, well, you know, Donald Trump won. They stole the election from him. What do you say to him?
Oh, I meet that person there once again. And, you know, the truth shall set you free. I say, why do you think he won? Did my vote not count? Did your vote not count? You know, Marjorie Taylor Greene is sitting there. Think about it, guys. All of these people who are saying that the election was stolen, they were elected on the same ballot.
Yeah, there is that little thing, little sticky point.
Truth shall set you free, Michael. And that's, you know, that's where I begin with. And I don't write those people off. Right. I don't write anyone off. We sit and we'll have a conversation. We'll try and get to the truth. That's who I've always been. That's who I'm going to continue to be. It's about the truth. It's about honor and integrity, Army Corps values. They taught me that. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to keep being me. Honest, truthful, straightforward.
How do you see I guess one way to put it is the environment, but how do you see the efforts that were created by Stacey Abrams and Ralph Warnock and the impact that they've had on the state of Georgia? Is there any of that comes into play in a district like the 14th? How does that energy that's, you know, surrounding that has surrounded this political process in your state, where you've been the center, the focus of the political universe, now for a bit, as a state, given the work that was there, the seats that were won, taking both the Senate seats, has that changed the dynamic in Georgia politically? And, you know, for candidates like yourself, does it create its own energy, or is it a drag? How do those storylines play out for campaigns like yours?
I think it's a positive. And that movement that you're talking about, it actually started Lucy McBath, and Stacey Abrams continued it. And mm-hmm. People said that, there's no way Raphael Warnock or John Ossoff are going to win here in Georgia. That's what they did. And Georgia elected Joe Biden. So there's an energy there. It's palpable. People are hopeful. And, I've talked to a lot of Democrats in the district as well, and they're excited. They think we can do this. So we just need to keep investing in the district. That's what my campaign's all about, investing in the district for Democrats. And I think what you'll see in independents, I think you'll see a lot of people start to move away from, the big lie in very rapid order. People aren't happy about that. Some people, of course, they've bought into it, but we've got to keep telling the truth and got to keep pushing back on the misinformation and disinformation.
So on that point, when you go back and you look at in that vein, the boycotts that, that rose up around the voter suppression bill that passed and the governor signed. What do you think of people and their response to that? What was the response to that in your district? How did your voters respond to those efforts? And how did you navigate that space? Especially if they say, well, there's nothing wrong with this.
Well, like you're saying, there is a mixed bag there. There's some outrage. There's some, And then there's also a little bit of apathy. And then there's also people saying, yeah, the big lie, we should have done something.
Right.
Look, and when I tell people, I talk about SB 202. I say, look, people, these rules were put in place by the Republican-led caucus back in 2010. They were good enough before. Why aren't they good enough now? This isn't about election security, This is about suppressing the vote, plain and simple. Just got to lay out the fact. And Stacey Abrams did a beautiful job of laying those out for Senator Kennedy when he asked her to, run down a few things that disagreeable. I think he got more than what he bargained for there.
Yeah, he didn't see that coming. He was like, I need to get my time back. Well, you asked me a question.
Reclaiming my time. Don't answer the rest of it.
Right.
So we need to keep educating people on, what that is. And that look, we've got to get the John Lewis Voting Rights Act passed in Congress. Full stop. Georgia was a proving ground.
Right.
And now you have several other states following, look, we can't rig the game. Let's have a level playing field. That's why I want dark money out of politics. I say you can't buy flowers because we're not going to, accept any corporate PAC money. So we're relying on voters to fund this campaign. So look, I don't know what else to say about that.
How's that going?
Fundraising?
How are the organization and the fundraising and the overall response to the campaign going?
The response has been overwhelming, and I'm truly humbled by, people reaching out to the campaign, volunteering. It's a little early for that, I try to tell them. A little early for the volunteers, but, the money's coming in. And every time Marjorie Taylor Greene, pulls one of her stunts, she's making money off of it, of course, but people decide they want to donate to our campaign. So we're doing quite well. I'm hopeful that, of course she's got a huge megaphone right now. We're not keeping up with her. She's probably out raising us 5-1, but we're hopeful that we'll be able to keep up.
Well, I wish you the best, Sergeant. I always admire those who, obviously who serve our country as you have, but then want to serve it further by stepping into this highly charged political ring.
That was always my pleasure to serve.
Right. It's all of a sudden now it's a different kind of service, but one you're built for. So how can people follow your campaign, support it, contribute, whatever? Where can I go?
Simply go to MarcusForGeorgia.com and donate to our campaign, read up about us. And it's an exciting time right now. Please come and join the mission.
All right, folks. He's Sergeant Marcus Flowers, U.S. Army vet, veteran of Afghanistan, which we actually didn't. Actually, before I let you go, because I did want to peg that. What's your, you alluded to Afghanistan and the withdrawal there. You served there. You helped try to pull together pieces there. What's your take on the Biden administration's and even the Trump's administration, which began the withdrawal, to withdraw our troops there in Afghanistan?
You know, I neither condoned nor condemned that decision. It had to be made. I would have liked to, personally, I would have liked to see the Afghans in a better position, but I understand fully that the president had to make a decision. You know, it's 20 years. You know, I lost brothers and sisters there on the battlefield, colleagues of mine. I was a defense contractor at the time, helping, you know, train Afghan National Army and police. I would have liked to seen it in a better place. And that's where I'll leave that. You know, yeah. Decision had to be made.
Right. So. All right. Okay. Well, I appreciate you stopping by, Marcus, for the conversation. Again, you can follow Marcus's campaign for the 14th Congressional District up against Marjorie Taylor Greene at marcusforgeorgia.com. Check him out if you are inclined. Support him. And keep listening to those voters. They'll always tell you what they want. They always will. And if you can be the guy to bring it to them, regardless of your party label, they'll back you and support you. So I wish you well in the race, my friend.
Thank you, Michael, for having me. I appreciate the opportunity to talk with you.
Absolutely. Well, that does it for this conversation, folks. It's always a joy, as you know, to have you when you come along for the ride. Don't forget to download us at Stitcher, TuneIn, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you get that download on. Follow me on Twitter at Michael Steele. You can follow Mark. Do you have a Twitter handle, Marcus? What's your Twitter?
My Twitter handle is, let me say it's Marcus for Georgia also. Let's see. I have to look at that sometimes. I don't use it. It's Marcus for, the number four, Georgia.
Marcus at Marcus for Georgia. And, you know, folks, I'd love it when you hang out with me. And until next time, get the vaccine. We don't have to wear the masks. Oh, here we go. Here we go. We're working it, right?
Troy.
So anyway, until next time, folks, be well, take care, and peace out.
I'm sports psychologist Dr. Andrew Jacobs. I created the Sportsmanship Foundation to promote and educate parents and athletes about the role of good sportsmanship in our development. Learn more at winnersunlimited.com. That's winnersunlimited.com.
Everyone loses golf balls, even the pros. When you need golf balls, go to lostgolfballs.com, the world's largest inventory of used golf balls. All the top brands, in stock, 50% off retail. LostGolfBalls.com.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits, with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
You have 5 new messages.
Hey, Carl, it's Jen from Finance. Could you submit your expenses this week?
Hey, Carl, happy Friday. It's Jen, Finance. Just need those receipts today.
Me again, Carl. Really need those receipts, like last week.
Please just tell me where they are. Are you by your desk right now?
Finance teams, you shouldn't be chasing down Carl or anyone else. With Ramp, expenses are sent with a text and reminders happen automatically. Switch your business to ramp.com today and love finance again.